Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Amy Dickinson. Dickinson is the syndicated Ask Amy advice columnist. Her column appears in over 150 newspapers nationwide. She's also host of a biweekly feature on NPR's Talk of the Nation and a panelist on NPR's quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She recently published a delightful and well-received memoir called The Mighty Queens of Freeville, A Mother, a Daughter, and the Town That Raised Them. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thanks, Tish.
Now, what prompted you to write a memoir about all this personal and some of it's very hurtful stuff that happened in your life?
Well, it's not like I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. Let's just, you know, state that for the record. I'll tell you what it was. I was being prompted. I'm fortunate enough that publishers were sort of chasing me to write a book. And everybody wanted me to write an Ask Amy advice-y book. And I started to think of this project as Ask Amy's Big Book of Advice. And I'll tell you, I tried like the devil to
really
write that book. Oh, yeah, I tried. And it wouldn't come. And one day, about, I don't know, 2 years ago, I went to see my niece's kindergarten play at the Freeville School. And I was sitting there in the audience, surrounded by family members and people, you know, who have been in my life for a long time, neighbors and people I went to high school with. And we were watching this play on the stage where I was once a kindergartner, second grader, performing. And I thought to myself, this is it. This is the story I want to tell. And, of course, the kids, it was so cute. They were doing this show about where each class was a different barnyard animal. And, like, the kindergartners were chickens and the first graders were pigs. And it was just so sweet. And when I got back home, I had this scheduled frightening phone call with a very scary agent in New York. And so she called me promptly at 2, and she said, so this book, how's Amy's Big Book of Advice coming along? And I said, you know what? It's not going to happen. She said, oh, good God. Sweet Jesus. What do you want to write about? And I said, you know, I really want to write about livestock. And she started laughing. She said, you know what? I don't even know what you're talking about, but I love the way it sounds, and I love the way you sound, and so go for it. And boy, it just happened after that.
That's amazing. And it does feel like it was something that just flowed out of you. Now, did you have to talk to your family and get release forms to talk about them? You didn't use fake names, obviously. These are real people that you're writing about.
Yeah. Well, I did get permission, and I did, but I didn't get release forms. Tish, now I'm worried. What if they start suing?
You never know.
Oh,
you never
boy.
Know.
What I
if
did,
it goes on the bestseller list, you will hear from them.
I will. No, I'll hear from their attorneys. What I did get was permission. First of all, from my daughter. I tell you, I was very nervous about this whole undertaking because I knew I would be writing about my divorce, which happened when my daughter was a baby. And I had always maintained a very, very amicable and friendly relationship with my ex. And I knew that I would want to tell the story of this breakup, which had completely changed my life and hers. And this is going to sound really name-droppy, but I was out to dinner with Nora Ephron, and I took the opportunity to say, can I ask your advice? You know, I'm an advice giver, so I ask for it a lot.
That makes sense to me.
And I asked her about this project. And I asked her, because I said, I know you've written about your, you know, heartburn is a very, very thinly fictionalized version of her breakup with
yes.
Carl Bernstein.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, can I ask you how your sons have reacted to that book over time? And she said, you know, one will always be a little bit mad at me about it, and the other is fine. But I asked her advice, and she talked to me for a long time about this, and the first thing she said was, you absolutely must get Emily's permission. You have to tell her the truth. She deserves to know it. It's mm-hmm. her life, and you have to get her permission. And if you don't get her permission, don't do it.
That's great advice.
And
yeah.
It was great advice, and it sounds so simple, right? But I went to Emily the next night, and I sat down with her, and I said, this is what I'm thinking about doing, and this is what I'm thinking about writing about. And so now I want to tell you the story that I'm going to try and write about. Mm-hmm. And it was a really important moment. And I realized I had not told her the unvarnished truth.
So this was something that helped her get to know her own life and her mother better, I would assume.
Yeah, it did, although we know each other really well. But what it did, too, was, you know, Nora Ephron had said to me, look, she said, my parents were writers, and they were thieves. They stole from us, you know, their children.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
She said, don't ever do that. Emily has her own story to tell. So when you're writing your story, make sure that you don't write her story, too. And so this is how it was such great counsel. So this is how I chose to do the book. It's always about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The joke is always going to be on me. But I did write about other family members as they intersected with my own life.
Yes, and in that vein, I want to talk about this. Mighty queens, you say they're funny, opinionated, take charge of their lives, and know how to be in a community. What do you mean by that? Know how to be in a community?
Well, what I mean is they know how to be together. They know, I think if you're from a big family as I am, that's close as mine is, you learn a lot about being in what I call in community, not just in a community, but you actually know how to commune.
With each other. Huh?
With each other. And I think the skills you learn, how to give, how to take, you know, how to share, these are skills that you take out into the world. And as somebody who's a member of a large family in a tiny town, we are the community, my friend.
Yes, yeah.
And I got to watch when I was a child, and then I got to show this to my own daughter, how to be in the world. And that means, you know, going to church suppers and going to pancake breakfasts and showing up at the chicken barbecues and trying to be helpful and how to relate to one another in the world. Mm-hmm. It's a huge thing.
Oh, it is. It is. It's such a different world living in a small town. You really have a commitment to people that you actually really know intimately, more so than if you're in a big alienating city.
Right. And actually, one part of that commitment is that your neighbors and your family, I feel like there's a tacit agreement in a way that they will also protect you.
Mm.
And that means protect your privacy a little bit, as I see my neighbors doing. For me. I mean, we've all, you know, there's something flinty about, have you noticed, Tish? We're kind of flinty people up here. And so I think we're careful, and I really appreciate that. I love that we, I don't feel like we're gossipy. I don't feel like we're malevolent. Mm-hmm. I feel like mm-hmm. we're careful with one another, because when you went to high school with someone, and you know you're going to see them off and on for the rest of your life, you tend to be a little careful.
Now, your book is very funny and very touching, but there's a certain thread that runs through it, and it is this thread of divorce that has affected most of the women in your family. Talk to us about what happened when your father left.
Well, you know, you do start to wonder if it's genetic at some point.
Divorce, right?
Yeah. Mm. My father took off. I mean, he just did when I was 12. And he left a family, 4 kids, wife, and a barn full of Holstein cows.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pretty dramatic, traumatic episode in my life. I certainly see in retrospect how traumatic it really was, because I keep going back to it. It's something I've been trying to make sense of and explore from much of my life. And, you know, sometimes the farthest I get in terms of exploring it is to laugh about it, because it was so dumb.
Well, yeah, much of this book is. I mean, it's about your father's absence.
Yes.
And how you have filled in the absences.
Right. And, you know, I saw him recently, and he, you know, I, as an older person now, I sort of appreciate aspects of that guy.
Really?
Yeah, because what that guy, you know, the kind of person who can do that, the positive aspects of somebody who could sort of walk away like that is, like, he's always, like, walking. Like, he's somebody who moves forward.
Or is he running?
Well, he's 80, doesn't run too fast, but I have to say, he has this life force that's sort of cuckoo, and I appreciate that about him. I hate what he did, and he did it over and over and over again to other people. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate that energy, like that crazy life force that's all about, oh, I'm going to move on, and my life is going to be awesome.
Well, see, it looks like you inherited that, Amy.
I think I did. I worry about it. I also inherited the jackassy gene, I have to say. I know that. I know that. I know that's a straight line right to him.
You said in your book that the only thing you never forgave him for was selling the cows on your dairy farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was traumatic, wasn't it?
Well, that was an unforgettable day because, well, it was March. Do I need to tell you what that day was like?
March in upstate New York.
Pouring rain. Mm-hmm. There was still snow on the ground. I mean, I'll never forget it. And unfortunately, he sold this herd of cows, and he did not tell us that he had done that. And so these vans showed up, these huge cattle trucks showed up, and these guys hopped off, and they just started taking them. And the way our farm was set up is like any farm. It was open on one end to the barnyard, and so the cows would file in on one end of the barn. But there was another entrance to the barn in the back of the barn, and that's where the people come in. So the cows come in one end, the people come in the other. The cows never walk out the entrance that the people come in, and so when these guys were leading them out the wrong entrance, they went crazy.
Oh.
And it was like, you know, the work of Temple Grandin and how she's done all these studies about how animals react to changes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They went crazy.
But it was also you losing more members of your family.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And of course, I had such a love-hate relationship with these cows anyway. I think universal to any farm kid, you hate them on some level.
Oh,
you
I'm
do.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was a devastating day. Absolutely unforgettable.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you have a remarkable mother. She pulled herself together. She went back to school, and she began teaching at 53. I'm amazed by that.
She didn't go back to school. She went to school. She graduated from Dryden High School, never went to college, and then she went to college. I think she was 48 years old. She'd been a typist at Cornell at the engineering school. I mean, I drive by Carpenter Hall and I think, hi, Mom, because, you know.
It's an amazing thing that she was able to do that. You inherited some of that as well.
Plucky. Plucky. Yeah, no, it was something to watch. And as a young person, to watch your own mother do that, amazing.
Really great role model. Now, unfortunately, I mean, your path took the same kind of path. You ended up in a marriage where your husband left you. To talk to us about how that continued to affect you, this women raising children without men.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I mean, when it happened to me, I guess you'd have to be an idiot not to expect it. But nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, right? I was completely stunned and surprised. But one thing I did know was I knew I could do it because I'd watched all these other women do it by themselves. And I knew I wouldn't be alone because I had these people who were going to help me.
And that's when the community came back. If you're just joining us, my guest is Amy Dickinson. We're talking about her new memoir called The Mighty Queens of Freeville. Now, let's talk more about the Mighty Queens. You said something very amusing in reference to them. You said, I come from a family of women who have a lot to say. In fact, my mother and her three sisters have been engaged in a conversation about nothing in particular that started in 1929. I love that.
I know.
Talk to us about how these women have surrounded your life and enriched it.
I was with them last night, and we laughed and laughed and laughed. And then, of course, I can't even remember what we were laughing about. As people who are in intimate daily relationships, they have a way of circling back over and over and over again. And in my book, I have a list, a very helpful list of conversation topics that includes jams, jellies, and preserves. current events, pop culture, politics and you, Glenn Beck, and curtains.
That is so great.
Somehow we keep circling back to the curtains because it's like you can never get the curtains quite as you want them. So, yeah, we keep going back to curtains.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful. It's life. My mother had sisters and my grandmother had four sisters, big Irish clan, and it's the same thing.
And sometimes you think, are we ever going to shut up? And the answer, no.
Hopefully not, is my answer.
Right.
Well, let's talk about what you've been doing, engaged in for the last half dozen years, the advice column. Do you have an imaginary or a real portrait of the kinds of people who actually write to you for advice? It's not something I would ever do.
Oh, really? Because I thought I got a letter from you. No, just kidding. No, I would never do it. But here's what I think, and here's why I think my own story is resonating with readers. People, the first question they ask me when they meet me is, how do you know what to say? How do you know what you know? It's usually thrown down at as a challenge after somebody's had a couple of drinks. They're like, who made you God, Amy?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this book is the answer to that. I feel like I do know who's writing to me, and I feel like I know them because they lead lives not unlike mine. They want to know how to make things right with people. They want to. They want some help parenting their little kids. They want to know how to keep their in-laws off their back.
Mm.
You know, how do you keep your mother-in-law from dropping in? I'm like, change the locks.
don't have any liquor available.
And so I really identify with these people. And, you know, I've been in radio for a really long time as a sort of a passion. And I have to say, when I put the column together, it's like I can hear people speaking. Does that sound crazy?
No.
But I do. I hear their voices, and I love the way they write. I love the way they tell their problems. You know, the way they bury the lead. People are like, okay, dear Amy, my husband is so wonderful. We've been married for 25 years, and I think, methinks he may not be too wonderful. Read on. You know, and then it's like they have a really, everyone has their own way of telling their story. And that's what I love about it. I feel like I'm bearing witness. You know, we all are. Anybody who reads my column is bearing witness to somebody else's story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing.
And it also brings community together. I mean, you come from a small town, and the people who write to you probably think that you're their best friend. And it's a small town kind of feeling, advice from the neighbor kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Your stuff really is quite down to earth and very honest.
Well, thank you. Even though I hear from hundreds of people literally a day, I mean, this speaks to what you just said, people will contact me and say, hey, Amy, it's me. I wrote to you in 2003. I just want you to know that everything's cool. And I'm like, great.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you do get follow-up and you find out if people are doing well.
I do. I do get follow-up, and I mainly love that. I mean, who doesn't want to know really what really happened?
Do you ever get anybody writing to you saying that your advice messed up my life more?
You know, I haven't had that. Mm. I have daily people write to me telling me I'm an idiot. I mean, I'm used to that. I say, you don't need to tell me. I tell myself that most days. But I've never, fortunately, I feel like I've been spared that. I mean, I've never, because what is my advice but about how to be peaceful, respecting one another, mm-hmm. how to set boundaries? I'm not advising that people, for instance, Tish, because of my own personal history, I find it really, really hard to tell someone to give up on a marriage.
Ah.
I do. I know that other advice columnists will say, dump the bum, move on. I find that really, really hard to do. And so most often I try to counsel people, well, try this, try that. And if it doesn't work out, then you need to make another choice. But I have never told someone to dump someone. I mean, obviously, if somebody's being abused, no question.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you're in a bad patch, I'm not going to tell somebody to walk away because that's what happened to me.
And your mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lots of other people.
Absolutely. Everybody knows somebody who that has happened to. Now, one statement you made that stood out in your book, too, to me is, Your question, you said, for me, the two hardest questions to answer have been, who am I and what do I want?
Right.
Have you answered those?
I have. I have answered those questions. Writing this book sort of helped me answer that. And one of the things I learned in trying to answer those questions for myself is that the answer changes through time, especially the whole what do I want thing. And I really see that recently with the economy having shifted so drastically and so quickly and so swiftly, changing so many lives. You know, 18 months ago, you ask a typical woman my age, professional woman, what do you want? Her answer might have been, I really want a $1,200 Fendi handbag. Nowadays, not so much. And I think that in a way, this shift has given us something of a gift. It's allowed us to drop back and try to answer that question differently. What do I want? And the answer is, I want to be healthy. I want to be happy. I want to be in a family. I want to be in a community. I want to be respected. You know, that's what we want.
I think we went crazy in this country. Greed, you know, thinking money was going to save us from God knows what.
Right.
But this makes people, you know, focus on what's really important.
I have an office at the Chicago Tribune on Michigan Avenue, which is one of the world's most storied shopping avenues. And I go to the office when I'm in Chicago, and I watch people carrying bags and bags and bags full of stuff. And there's something about that visual for me where I, too late in life in some ways, have really learned to dial back on a lot of the material expectations, because I went a little crazy, too.
Oh, I'll bet. I can understand.
Everybody
that.
Did. You know.
Yep. Is there anything else writing this book clarified for you that surprised you that you hadn't dug out in regard to your life? And
Well, it has this sort of surprise, amazing, happy ending, Tish. That
tell us about that happy ending.
I was writing my story down, and then I stepped full stop into a Lifetime movie for women. It was because I became engaged in this amazing midlife romance. And as I was writing the book and dealing with a death in the family, illnesses in the family, my daughter leaving for college, and as I'm writing all of this down, I went and fell in love for the first time, like, ever. And I got to write my own happy ending. Better than writing it, I got to live it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's an amazing ending. It almost seems like fiction.
I know. It is an amazing story to, after being single for 17 years and sort of happily single and doing some of the kookiest blind dating ever, I then came back home to be with people to work on this book and literally stepped into a relationship that changed my life.
Mm-hmm. And this is somebody you had known in childhood, right?
Yes. I first met Bruno when I was around 12. Yeah, and he grew up 3 miles away. And it's been I just saw somebody a half hour ago who I went to high school with and, of course, haven't seen in 30 years. And she says, hey, wow, I read your column, blah, blah, blah. It was really fun to catch up. And she says, so are you here now? And I said, yeah, I married Bruno. She said, you're kidding me.
It's unbelievable. You had to go to Chicago to re-meet Bruno.
I know. I just got lucky. And, you know, I had a little bit of hard luck along the way. And I won't say I deserved it, but I was certainly ready for it.
Yeah, I think it's great. You said it helps to be on the verge of elderly when you found your grand romance.
And of course, you know, and we have all these kids, so we couldn't really court in front of them, certainly not the way we wanted to. And so we kept going on moonlight drives, in a pickup truck in the same along the same roads where I went on moonlight drives when I was in high school, and it was so when people say, oh, you know, I'm in midlife but I fell in love, I feel like I'm in high school, I really retraced my steps. And we were as dumb. Well,
was it some of it kind of scary?
We were as dumb as anybody ever was, but it was so wonderful to do this. And we had a very old-fashioned kind of courtship, which was also wonderful. And one of the things Bruno said to me when we first got together and we told our sad stories the way you do, he said, well, Amy, I have an idea. Let's do everything differently this time.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
Mm-hmm. And you are. Now, you say you've had a life that's been blessed with incident. To tell us what you mean by that. So you feel blessed by the good and the bad, indeed?
Sure. I mean, this is another thing Nora Ephron said to me. She said, you know, my mother coined the phrase, it's all material.
Really?
And I thought, oh, boy. And that's what it is. If you are a storyteller, and if you're a writer, and I feel I've been that ever since I was a little kid, you look on the stories in your life as material, as something you can share with people. Mm-hmm. And it has been an eventful life, I have to say.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it and sounds like it. But a lot of people use that kind of stuff to write fiction.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well,
so
look
you've
at me.
Done, you've
I,
done something
I have,
a little differently.
I have no imagination. I only have one novel in my head, and it's a caper. Me and my mom were private eyes. See, I'm going to blow the whole plot now.
Are you really writing this?
We're private eyes, right? It's like a Jessica Fletcher kind of thing.
Okay.
We live in this little town, and the character who's me runs a donut shop, and it's like all about sort of donuts and murder. So doesn't that sound awesome?
I think it probably would sell in this culture.
This is like the only piece of fiction I have in me, which is really just about me wanting to run a donut shop, really, which is something I'm dying to do.
Well, I think you would probably get that opportunity if you wanted it.
I know.
But before we run out of time, I want to talk to you about being a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Tell us what that experience has been like. Has it been a blast?
Oh, okay. Picture this. You know the old Dick Van Dyke show? Where it's like in the writer's room with Maury Amsterdam, and okay, I get to be Rose Marie. I always wear like a vintage dress, and we go backstage before the show, and we write our material. Like, we all have to write a bluff. And so it's like being with the smartest people you've ever met, who are the funniest people you know, and like working with them and being with them, and it's just a complete and total joy.
That's great. That's great. Are you working on a new book, real briefly?
I am. I'm working on a prequel. More about me.
And your childhood.
Hey, that's the title. No, I'm kidding.
And now more about me.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, we will look forward to that. Amy Dickinson, we have run out of time, and I really want to recommend your book, The Mighty Queens of Freeville. It's a delight. It's touching. It's funny. And I do hope people will go out and read it. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tish. It's a pleasure.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.